Greetings. I am Shusada Kona Kumada. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. This is Shusada Kona Kumada, and you are listening to Satsang with Shusada on BBS Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in with us again tonight. We've got a lot to share, and I'm actually quite excited to share it with you. So we're going to get started. If I can ask you to take a nice deep breath and close your eyes and kind of let me guide you through as I clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zedekiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. Now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. Mother, Father, God, we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Come on back to me. I have to laugh every time I hit this Tibetan brass bowl because I never know how hard the thing's going to hit it. It's like I have, like, you know, I just watch it happen. And sometimes it's like really hard and sometimes I just never know. It always makes me laugh. All right. Very good. So we just had a nice... it was satsang, but we actually just made a video during satsang. We've been doing a series called Conversations with Shusada, and we put them up on YouTube. So you can actually find those if you are so inclined. And it's where I sit down with one of my students or someone, and they have an opportunity to ask me questions, and we just kind of have discourse back and forth. So we had an opportunity tonight for PLEN and Megan to sit with me and to just do this kind of one-on-one discussion, which was really beautiful. Keep your eye out for that hitting, you know, in the next week, probably, if I can get around to getting it uploaded. But it was really, really good stuff. Yeah. And I'd like to somehow kind of recreate that here tonight on the radio. So I very specifically tonight wanted to address a component that is part of the undoing in one's spiritual path. It has to do with that the ego, which, you know, you're all familiar with the term ego, and we have to be careful. The ego's, you know, we have kind of a Freudian idea of what it is. And then when I speak it, you're going to have your own concept of what it is. So I go back and forth between calling it the ego and the personal self. But it's loosely, you can think of it the way you have ever always learned what ego is. But people will say, you know, drop the ego. And it's not that simple, because the people who are saying drop the ego, that's coming from the ego. So it's not like, it's really that simple. But what we do in the work that I do very specifically is to go in and to begin to uncover all of the components of what have created the personal self, right? How consciousness has identified with the concept of separation, and in that has moved into a place where it believes that there is an I, and that I would be the thing that you think to be you. So it would comprise the physical form. It would comprise the concept of, you know, you being the creator of your thoughts, that it comprises you being the doer in your life, the one in control, the one that has power. All of the emotional states that are carried, the beliefs that are held, and the judgments that come in order to support those beliefs, and how the beliefs are held both consciously and unconsciously. And all of that comprises the sense of personal self. So the work that I teach very specifically is how to systematically go in deeper and deeper into consciousness to begin to release the unconscious level of that personal self to be witnessed by an objective observer, and then to allow for dissolution of both sides of the opposites to happen. So whatever it is where you're consciously holding a belief, whatever it may be, the other side is being held on an unconscious level equally. It's always equal. So the work that I do goes in, and it uses the events taking place in your life. So we'll take an event and then we'll pick it apart so that you can get in and actually see what's running and see all the components of how you've taken a story and identified with aspects of it and used it to actually manifest and create the reality that you are walking yourself through every day. In so doing, that reality begins to change for you. And it doesn't mean it has to change on the outside. Sometimes it does, though. But whether it changes on the outside or not, the way you perceive it completely shifts. So you are literally living in a different reality than you were 6 months ago, maybe 2 days ago, and certainly in a different reality from all of those around you who are in their own little reality bubbles, right? Sharing a collective reality, but the level of perception keeps one locked in their own sense of reality, if that makes sense to the mind that's perceiving it right now. So one of the things that I like to look at, because it's such an important component for the seeker, is how the ego functions from three predominant places, and they're all interrelated, but they are domination, manipulation, and control. So anything that that comes out of the personal self, whether it's an action or words or unconscious body language, you know, all of it comes from one of those, if not a combination of all three of those components. The ego itself, the personal self, always has a selfish agenda for everything. Now, the ego becomes very good at glossing over it and turning its own, it creates its own mindset where it believes it's justified in pushing its agenda, mostly from a very benevolent place. So it can be like, you know, the reason I'm doing this is because it's for your for your own good. I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing this for you. Classic, classic manipulation there. But that's all it's capable of. So the ego is not capable of what you think of as love. It is not. True love, what the ego experiences as love, is actually not love in its truest form. Now, love is what you are. Love is not a feeling. But for the ego, it experiences it as a feeling. And within that, even though it may in a moment feel a sense of love, what happened is that the pain that sits in the space of its experience of separation, throughout the course of moving itself out of that pain and creating what it needs to create to stay out of the pain, one of the positive states of mind that comes forward out of that is love. But it's not real because it's actually founded in pain. And then you're just going to have to kind of sit with that to really see it. States of mind came into being in that moment where consciousness perceived itself to be separate. And those downward states of mind spiraled. And at a certain point, when it got low enough, the identified self now, which is, it's now a program that has just begun to run, it swung out of that downward spiral in order to move into an upward spiral. And those we think of as the positive states of mind, hope being right there in the swing out of the negative into the positive. And in the program, it spirals upwards and tries to stay there and hold it in a state of stability, but it can't because the program is cyclical and it's a program. So it has to run. So as hard as the ego will try to maintain a sense of stability and a sense of equanimity, it can't. Ultimately, it's got to swing back over and into the downward spiral again because it is the downward spiral that reinforces the program over and over and over again. And every time that spiraling occurs and the identification with victimization occurs, it just gets reinforced and the sense of separation becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Does that all make sense? Yeah, okay. So there's this cool thing that's going on with people who are very drawn to a spiritual path, right? So, of course, it's ego because ego wants that thing that it thinks it can't ever get, which is, you know, unification with the divine, because it sees the divine as something out there and it looks at itself as if it's in a fallen state and it has to return to that thing. Well, the higher teaching here is that it never happened. There was never a moment of separation. There was never anything that distanced you as an aspect of the Creator from the Creator in its entirety. It never happened. But consciousness has locked into a concept and has become identified with a concept. And it seems extremely real. So conceptually, we can talk about these things and I can get you to kind of get an understanding, but then it has to move from concept into an actualized experience, right? So to say, I am God, you can recognize on one level, the mind can say, yes, that must be true, right? And on a level, you may even be able to convince yourself, the ego self, that I am God. Right. But there's an actual experience of it which actualizes it within consciousness. Yeah. And from that space forward, it is your reality. Not something you think to be true, not something you want to be true. It just is. Right. And so the work that I do is to take people's lives and what they walk through on a daily basis and to utilize every little component of those to get them to a place where they begin to actualize the understandings that they've been given, to move it from concept into reality. Yeah. But it's not easy, right? And one of the things that I come up against a lot, in different forms, of course, is the manipulative aspect of the ego. And the ego is, as you know, the lower mind itself is incredibly subtle and incredibly tricky. It sees everything, right? The ego, the lower mind, it's playing every single role that you have, that you carry and identify with in your life. Every single one of them, it's all the ego. It's all the one mind experiencing all of it. So the ego is the money-driven, greedy banker, you. And the ego is also the God-driven, you know, meditating yogi you, right? It's all of it and everything in between. One isn't any higher than the other. It's all just the ego. But that drive to return kind of home, yeah, is divinely driven, right? It truly is. And it is that force of divine will that continues moving a seeker deeper and deeper as the path becomes steeper and steeper. Although it's very difficult at times to hang on to that. So ego, when it comes into spaces where it's being really challenged, will utilize its resistance to the challenge to create a story for itself, where it can then kind of turn the tables around and end up taking that story and using it to manipulate outside circumstances or outside people who are involved. And to do it from a space where its sole purpose is to get the other to acknowledge the reality of what it's trying to create. And of course, none of it's real. So a common way that this presents is in someone who gets pushed to see an aspect that's playing out. And when it's something that is a trigger for them, meaning, you know, something that automatically puts them into that downward spiral because of their identification, they will not want to deal with it. And so mind loves, it loves, loves, loves. It's one of its favorite things to do at the level of a seeker of doing very deep work. It loves to take any kind of spiritual understanding that it's gotten its hands on along the way and to turn it around and to try to utilize it as its justification for not looking deeper and for not going in and rooting out that thing, that part of the program that is so entrenched that the person can't see past it. This is why it truly is necessary to have a guide to work with. And is it true that, and I know there's a lot of people out there who would, you know, have a problem with that statement because there's this kind of movement out there of these teachings and stuff where people are in the space of going, well, all the answers are within, find them within. Is that true? Well, of course it's true. Everything that exists is existing within. Period. Of course that's true. Is it true at the level of the identified consciousness? No. It is not. And you're kidding yourself if you think it is. The bottom line, and I'm, you know, I've got two testaments to this sitting with me right now because they've been walking this path, right, under my guidance. And they both would confirm this. The mind is so subtle and it is so good at what it does in order to perpetuate the program of the personal self that unless you have someone who has walked through it and has come out the other side, you will not be capable of seeing all the components of how it works. Piel Yan, can you speak to that? So that people don't think that I'm just, you know, making it up.
No, it's very subtle, and there are times where I really have been convinced of something, and it wasn't until you actually were there to, I'll say, ask the question first and then get things going, and then when we work it out, it's like, holy cow, like, I never, ever would have seen that, ever. And it's so surprising. It's actually kind of scary almost that it's that subtle. And how long have we been doing this work, you know?
right. And it continues, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, even when you see it and you have the moment of, oh, my gosh, like, wow, mind is going to go back in and question that. You know, even after you've seen it, it's still going to use that to go, can that be? No. Can that really be true? You know, and of course, it takes great, great trust in the person that's functioning as your guide. It takes great trust because the questioner is always there. And the questioner, you know, its job is to create doubt. You understand? The questioner is an enormous component of the ego. And its job is to create doubt. If it can keep consciousness in a space of identification and doubt, right, where it has to continue to question, it's gotcha. There's no walking out of that, right? There's no walking out of that. That is the program. So even when something comes and it is a true experience, when you have the moment of realization, oh my gosh, that's accurate. What she brought to me and said to me, no, this is what mine just did with that. This is the game it was playing that you bought into. Even when you see it after the fact, and that was real, and you know it because you can feel it when it's real. Yeah, it's different. It's still going to go, I don't know. Right? So you've got to trust your guide. Yeah. And of course, the experiences are there for you to walk through so that every time you walk through it, now you have more trust and more trust because you need it. Because the deeper you go, the more you've got to have the trust, because if you don't, you'll never do it. You will never do it. You will run away convinced that you're right and the guide was full of crap. All right? That's what'll happen. And all these amazing spiritual teachers on the planet that have people who have been very vocal about them out in the world, about how horrible they were and how they were a phony and they were this and that and the other. No. They did good work. But that's what happens to the ego when that spirit based drive is, that will is not strong enough to stand against the ego, right? And to duke it out and to come out the other side stronger, because that's what's required. So the trust is key. So what happens is the ego, it will take these things and utilize its capacity for manipulation. And it happens all the time. And there's this interesting thing that, and I watch it in all my students, right? So it's not like a student is bad if they come to me from a level of manipulation. It's just the program running the program, right? So the guide sees through that. That's nothing. No big deal. I don't identify you with your story, and I don't identify you with whatever you know, mechanisms the mind in the form of Megan is going to bring forward to try to get me to identify with her agenda, right? It's fine. What I can do for her is to show her, right? Maybe tell her flat out what her agenda is, or maybe not. Maybe just to pose a question and have her look at the question, right? Now, if you've got someone like Megan who carries a great deal of humility, that's easy, right? So she may come at me with something and I won't give her what she's looking for, and she may be a little disgruntled by that initially, and she may carry a story that says, oh, you know, she doesn't understand me, or she needs more information about, you know, what I'm dealing with because she can't see it. She hasn't walked this. She doesn't know. Right? So she can do all that. But what Megan will do, because she carries great humility, is catch herself within that at some point. And maybe it's a couple days, right? Maybe it's a couple minutes, a couple seconds, who knows? But she can catch herself in that and go, wait a minute. I've got to look at this. I have to at least look at this. Could it be true? Right? And now she's going to take it from a place where she's going to detach from her identification with her story and look at it objectively. Right? So she's going to see her story and all the components. Right? And then she's going to see what I brought and look at the two next to each other. Is that accurate? Yeah. She's going to look at the two next to each other, kind of comparing the two. And she's going to see which one actually comes out in the wash. She's going to wash them both. One of them's going to fall apart. The other one's going to hold true. Now she's capable of coming back after the fact going, you were right. Right. Now, without that marker of great humility, you can't do it. It's too threatening to the ego to admit its own defeat, right? It's working overtime to perpetuate its stories. It's working overtime to push its agenda. It's working overtime to dominate itself in relationship to others. So when I give you a component where I say, is that right? Or, you need to look at that. I think I've said that to PLN lots of times. Yeah. You need to look at that. There's nothing else I have to say. You need to look at that, right? She's capable of doing that, but others won't be, right? Because it's too threatening to the personal self. So instead, what it's going to do is it's going to keep continuing to try to push its story and try to get me to engage. And so generally, I just won't. And I remember in my own journey having times where there was something, some story that I was in, and I would either email it, or this was kind of before we did, God, you know, I started doing this work before we were texting people. That's crazy. It was like the early days of Instant Messenger, because that's how we used to do, it was all on the computer. So like I might be doing that, and literally my guide would just stop interacting with me, and it pissed me off. I used to get so angry, like, ah, why won't she answer me? Well, very simple, right? If she answers me, it confirms my story. Because in her answering, she's basically saying, yes, you have a viable reason that you're angry or that you feel whatever. Yeah. It's not right. It's wrong. But it's still real. It's not real. It's not real at all. So she just disengaged completely. And then where did that leave me? It left me with two opportunities. The first being I could be angry with her and convince myself that, you know, she was some, I don't know, two-bit guru who didn't know what she was talking about. And, you know, move away. Or it left me looking at whatever it was she did give me. And maybe it was just a question, or maybe it was just the, you need to look at that. I mean, a lot of times for me, it was just literally three words. Is that right? Is it? Is that right? And so there it sits, right? So how committed are you as a seeker of higher truth? That's what the question really boils down to, doesn't it? How committed are you? Right? Do you say you're on board, but then when push comes to shove, if it doesn't go your way, it's the highway. And that's where most people sit. I'm on board, right? Wow, you do great work. I want to be part of that. Wow, I can't believe all this stuff that I'm learning from this processing stuff. I can't believe the emotions that I've been able to tap into. I can't believe how much lighter I feel. I can't believe whatever the rest of it goes, right? But then in the moment, when the three little words come forward and it says, is that right? it can all fall apart because we're not committed enough to get real about those three little words. And the ego is really good at fighting. It's really, really good at fighting and getting the reaction that it needs. All it needs is the reaction, right? If I need to prove a point in order to bolster my sense of self, I'm very adept at doing what works for me with the people around me to get and elicit that response back from you. And as soon as I elicit that response back from you, I won. You see, I won. Game over. I'm victorious. So what happens when that one opposite you doesn't elicit the same response? Ooh, now I'm going to fight harder. This is beautiful because you can really watch the mind in all its glory. It cannot stand it if it thinks that it's not being seen clearly, if it thinks that it knows something someone else needs to know, if it thinks it's right and you're wrong. It cannot tolerate to be left in a space where others have an incorrect perception about it. It cannot tolerate it. And I have watched over and over and over people who will engage and then they will leave one text or an email or on the phone or wherever it happens to be where it seems like they've just cut it off. Fine. Yeah. Okay. I'm done. And then I sit back and I just wait. Yeah, let's see. Right? Let's see if you're really done or not. And they never are. Because unless it's going to truly just turn tail and run and never, ever contact you again, it's going to have to contact you again. Yeah. It's compulsory for the mind. I got to get you to engage. I'm not going to engage. Yeah. And I'm going to be very blunt the way I say this. I'm not going to engage because it's all bullshit. Right? It's all bullshit. Your story is all ego. Trying to manipulate me, trying to dominate me or a situation, trying to control the way I function, the way another functions. Right? Trying to create some compelling story that we all need to get on board with. I'm not doing it. Why? Well, because I have to stand on my own authority. That's not arrogance. I hold a level of authority because of the path that I've walked. It's all experiential. I know my sight. Yeah. I can watch the machinations of the mind and catch it in a nanosecond. And it's going to take you 2 years to walk through what I can see in a second. Just because I've walked the path, right? So within that, I own that authority. So when you come to me, and you say, I don't see what you see, unless you walk from the same space I walk, it's not accurate. Now, it can be accurate to say, I don't see what you see. What you see isn't real. So yeah, you're right. I don't see what you see. And I'm not going to buy into the story that what you see is something I'm supposed to see when I don't, because I see through it. You understand? I can see through it, through the story and the reality underneath it. So, of course, it becomes extremely personal for the one on the other side because, you know, now my teacher doesn't see me clearly. And that's very personal. She doesn't understand me. She doesn't, you know, I can't trust her. I don't. All of this stuff, right? And the whole time, all I see is this divine, precious, perfect being caught in the drama of the ego. That's all I see, you know? And you laugh, But at the same time, part of me is sad. Yeah. Because I have great compassion for all of the beings that are trapped in ego identification walking the planet. I have great compassion. And when I've had students who have come up against those personal barriers, who were not capable of moving through them, for as much as I did what I could to help them do that, when they just weren't capable and they ended up walking away, I have been the one in tears. Because what I see is the loss of the opportunity that they've been given. It is grace that leads anybody to a teacher. Whatever level that teacher's functioning on, it doesn't matter. It's grace that brings you, right? You're given the opportunity through your own good deeds, your own good karma, and grace. And then it's up to you what you're going to do with it, right? So for anyone who functions like I do as a teacher, for those who desire liberation, it is incredibly sad when you watch one of your students who professes to want liberation so badly, when you watch them literally fall subject to the story of the ego to such a degree that they can't remove themselves from it. It's very sad. Now, on the flip side, we know that the end result's always the same, right? They're going to walk through whatever experiences they have to now in their outside world. Everyone's going to test them, and they will have the opportunity to kind of set it straight or not. And whatever they choose is ultimately in their highest good. So, you know, it falls away. They walk away from their own work and their own opportunity. They take it, they take the opportunity away from themselves, right? And then it's a question of how much has to happen between that moment and then the moment when they kind of wake up again and recognize that they don't know, that they really don't know, that there are those who do. And the only thing those beings want for anyone is their liberation, right? Above and beyond everything. That's the only thing that matters. Being here, living this reality, isn't about being comfortable. It's not about, you know, I need to have a great job and a 401k and a new car every 3 years, and I need to die leaving my kids money. If you're going to play it out that way, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But that's not what it's about, right? It's about waking up. Not making this more tolerable. It's about waking up. And what does it take to do that? Well, for some people, it takes everything falling apart. Does it have to? No, it doesn't. It's all in your hands. You understand? You get the grace every moment of what your next choice is going to be. Now, if you're completely ego-identified, the choices are already made for you. The program decides what choices you make. There's no free will in that. But when you can move to a space where you're actually conscious in your life and not running an unconscious program, those choices make all the difference in the world. And when you have higher understandings, you are held accountable. You understand? You are held accountable for functioning from those understandings. And when you have a guide in place, part of that accountability is to continue to walk where that guide is leading you without questioning what the guide is bringing you. Because you don't know any better. You don't have the authority to question one who does. You don't. And for a lot of people, that will sound arrogant, right? And that's fine. That can be their own projection. No big deal. But there is a very deep truth to it. For one who has walked the path, for one who has become the vehicle of the self in the world, capital S, right? God, the Christ speaking through that vehicle in the world, it is an absolute reality. They have authority here that the ego does not. And it takes a great deal of humility to recognize yourself within that and say, okay. Okay. Let's come back to the question. Is that right? Oh, no, it's not. Damn. That'd be Megan. She does that a lot. What a beautiful, beautiful marker of your evolution when you can do that. When you can go, okay, you know, go ahead, beat me up. I'll take it because I got to see it. I got to see it. I got to see it. It hurts. I got to see it. I have a friend in Connecticut who spent a little bit of precious time with me here in Charlotte. And it was the thing that impressed me the most about him, his humility. It was beautiful to come literally on his knees from a place of such respect, true respect, not some kind of false respect that says, you know, yeah, you have this position and you're a guru or you're a sage or whatever it is you want to call it. And because you're this, you know, I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to want to touch your feet, or I'm supposed to bring you flowers, or I'm supposed to whatever it is. That's all just crap that we learn to do, right? Because we're supposed to, because it's a show of respect. I don't mean to denigrate that because that's beautiful in its own way, but it's not necessarily real. You can bring me flowers, but it doesn't mean you respect me. Right? You can come and you can, you know, shower me with compliments, but it doesn't mean you trust me. So to have someone come who had never even spent time with me from such a humble place that was just in the space of go ahead, tear me apart. Oh God, that's beautiful. So beautiful. I wish I could have 100 of you like that because it's beautiful. You know, it is that kind of metaphor of Jesus on the cross, you know, like you crucify yourself. Just go ahead, tear me apart. show me. Yeah. Because that's what it takes to truly walk a spiritual path. And it's really hard to hold it because the mind is so adept at doing what it does, right? It's so good at manipulating. It's so good at pushing an agenda and convincing itself that it's benevolent. It's, no, that's not my agenda. I don't have an agenda. I'm agendaless. Right? Yeah, right. Sure you are. Even people who are highly altruistic, there's an agenda there. How many people do anything without it being for their own best interest, ultimately, right? So yeah, you may have $5 million and you may give a million of it away, right? But chances are, and not in all cases, because there are people who actually do function from their hearts, but in most cases, you know, you did it because of what it's going to do for you, right? That sense that it's going to make me feel good. what about the one that makes them feel bad and they do it anyway? You're like going, oh God, I'm going to give it away. Just take it. Yeah. How cool is that? That's something I see here all the time, which is beautiful. You know, I'll use PLN as an example. She's got nothing. She gives me everything she's got. Not me personally, but gives it over to the work. Yeah. So that we can continue doing things like this radio program. Sacrifices are made. Then that's the bottom line. Sacrifices are made. It doesn't mean it has to be financial. Certainly. Certainly. The greatest sacrifice is just surrendering to doing your own work. Because it's not easy. Parts of it are easy, you know. That's why all these other spiritual paths are in place. People have to walk through those first. You know, yeah, get your feet wet. And for most people, that's what they need to do. They need to kind of start and, you know, it's this beach with this really long, shallow kind of incline or decline. So they kind of just wade in. The water's like bath water and it's comfortable. So they can kind of get in there and it's kind of fun. So they can play and they keep moving. It gets a little deeper and a little cooler, you know, and they acclimate. It's still okay. And then they get a little deeper and a little deeper. But what happens when they kind of reach the ledge? Do they just stand there? Do they retreat? Do they just jump into the void? If they fall off the ledge, do they swim like hell to get back to where they can plant their feet again? Or do they swim around in the unknown? Right? And people who are attracted to this path, you know, we're like the people who do like the, what do they call themselves? The polar bears, right? Yeah. People up in New York State and Canada and stuff where they just jump right into that freezing cold water, you know. Go ahead. It takes you forever. With you.
I have to turn my volume back on and put my thing down. Well, in our last 5 minutes that we have, you spoke many times today, and I know we've touched on this before, but just since we're saying it so much today, the importance of having a guide. So since we're on a radio station and, you know, you have people that can't physically come here to Charlotte or whatever, how can people engage with you or whatever and kind of have more of a guide presence?
That's a good question. And that really is an issue for us here, isn't it? I guess the best way right now is through these BBS programs, because it is, you are sitting with me. And energetically right now, I'm working with everyone that's listening to me. Right. And the same goes for pulling up all the archives. So either through our page on BBS or at kamaracenter.org, we have our archives available. So you can go in and download those and listen. We have videos that we're working on posting on YouTube under our Kamara Center channel there. And I have a book of the teachings and an introduction to the processing work, the work that we do on a mental level, coming out hopefully this fall. It's done. It just needs to go through final editing. And going forward, it is truly my desire to start doing webinars. Is that what we called them? Mm-hmm.
Webinars or teleconferencing. We're looking at
that. Right, where I can actually start working with people in larger groups, where you can all be connected simultaneously, and I can field questions. We can do it from a level of actually having an ongoing series of them, so that we'll do a piece of teaching on a whatever night it is during the week, and then like give people like homework for the week to keep things to look for and to work through, and then come back as a group the following week and keep doing that. Yeah, so that's all in the works. It just has to be worked out. But that is the challenge, you know, is to what do you do when you don't have someone physically there? And my friend in Connecticut is a good example of that. You know, he would listen and utilize all of that as much as he could and continue to just do his work. Maybe going forward, if we have people who really want to engage more, then we can create something where they'll have a way to contact me with questions or certainly you could send questions in through our BBS thing anytime that I could address on the air. I'm happy to do that. Absolutely. Or even take questions live. We could do that too. The weird thing for me is that just when it comes, it comes. And so I'm in it. And, you know, Pelion would tell you like half the time I'm literally like this body's just staring at the carpet. She has to like wave to me when it's time for the show to be over because I'm completely gone, you know. but that is a good question. I'm hoping to be able to. It's the age old problem of how, you know, the work that I do is not. It's not what you're seeing out in the world right now where you have huge groups of people coming together for Advaita work. Like, this is not that. It goes deeper than that. So that one-on-one is important. And like I said, super important because the mind is so subtle. And you won't see it yourself. You need help. So I will do my best to accommodate that more and more, definitely. And if y'all have an idea for me, please send it and let us know. Yeah. So how are we doing time-wise? We still have a minute? Yeah. Do either of you have anything you want to say in our last minute? You do? Come on over. Here's Megan. Megan Davis, our treasurer extraordinaire.
Something came to me as I was sitting there as someone who has... started in the bathwater and made my way down to it feels like a cliff. I just want people to know that first jump that you do take, it's all worth it. And you do come out on the other side. And every time thereafter, it gets easier and easier. So don't ever get discouraged.
What a beautiful little testament to the work. Yeah. And it's true. It does. From the level that in the beginning, the first jump, it's so ultra personal. And the ego is really kicking and screaming about allowing itself to even contemplate. There's another way of perceiving this thing. And coming out the other side of it, when you've seen all the components, and it's a huge awakening, you know, it really is. I forget how powerful that is, you know, because it's been a long time since I had that experience. And I'm really glad you said that, because after that, every time you move through the next piece, it becomes that much less personal. And the more that locks in, the easier it is to then go in and do deeper, harder work. Yeah. So in the beginning, it actually ends up kind of feeling a lot harder than it does later when it's more difficult work. Yeah, because it's just not personal anymore. And when it's not, what's stopping you from doing it? Yeah. Now, it doesn't mean the ego likes it. But it's become trained enough to allow it to move, you know. It feels safe enough at that point. In the beginning, it just feels like it's going to be annihilated in its, you know, hell no. But it actually starts to feel safe. Oh, I can allow the questioning. I can allow the looking. And okay, I'm still here. It's okay. You know, and it will be. It'll be there until it's not. Yeah. And that's fine. That's fine. We're not here to destroy it. Right. We're just here to see through it. That's all. It's not evil. It's it is what it is. Right. Kind of no story there. It just is what it is. So all we have to do is see through it and then continue to remind ourselves it's all just a story. Okay. So I'm going to leave you tonight with a really lovely song. More like a little, I don't know, just for some reason tonight, I felt like giving you a little blessing from me. And this is my way of doing that. And I hope you enjoy it. So we'll see you next Thursday night for Satsang. I love you so very much. Good night.
divine.